Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games, of an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us with a talk cast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444, and just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. You can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com and search for call ID 17702. Or if you want to join us on Twitch, just go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. I co-podcast there, and I keep an eye on that lovely, lovely chat room. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, my account there is sfuoncall, same spelling. And, of course, I have a personal account called Paul Franz, which I follow. If you want to, you can follow me there. I'm happy to be Catholic and an O's fan, which is awful sometimes, but I also love technology. So if you want to follow me, just warning about those things. And also, of course, if you want to, you can follow Franz Games, and you will actually see news about what's going on in those different proprietors. I think that's a word. But anyhow, moving on to ADB this week. They have a couple of things that they just put out this week. That is the Federation Commander Lyran Ship Card Pack number 2. It's available on those e-tailers, the Warehouse 23, Drive-Thru RPG, and RPG Word Game Vault. Also, now they have Starfleet Marines Counterattack available on those very three sites. Also, those are a bunch of counters customized for each empire. So instead of having the generic ones for playing, you can actually have ones that look a little more like specialized ones. You know, you have a Gorn that actually looks like a Gorn. You have a Xeni looking like a Xeni, a Lyran like, well, I'm not sure what the difference between Lyran and Xeni, except for possibly the color. When it comes to the counters, that is not, I'm not sure exactly when it comes to the actual those races themselves. Moving on to the Starfleet, the SFB Online Tournament, which is Starfire 5. Round 2 is completed with Condemned Stimpy beating Devil. And right now, round 3 is only have one game to fight because of Mad Jack, the Klingon, defeated Drago Astro in the Romulan KR. Quite an interesting game. If you didn't see it, sorry that you missed it. But there's still another round 3 game, of course, because Cadets and me moved on from round 2 to round 3. And this is going to be interesting in that we've got Cadet Stimpy in the Hydrant versus King Zilla. Hi, Seth. In the Hydrant. So it is a civil war. So no matter what, the Klingon will be fighting a Hydrant in the final. Now, what's going to be interesting to me, what's interesting about that is another classical battle of Klingon versus Hydran. You know, I call it classical because they border each other on the Starfleet universe map, you know, and how the empires are laid out. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to the SFB Online website, it has moved from its previous location to a new location. Basically, it's moved servers because the server had become, it's already 5 years old, and I like to renew my servers every so often because you never know how glitchy they get, you know, crap that get built up and all this kind of other things. So it's always good to start anew. So I moved it to a new server. If you have issues, please contact me as soon as possible, either via the Discord server or via email, or even if you want to, if you can't log into the game server, then you're in trouble there. But in any case, I will be I'll do my best to get you back to you as soon as possible. I think I've worked out all the glitches that have been occurring, so you should be good to go. If you have any more issues, please tell me ASAP. Thank you very much. Moving on to the library, unfortunately, I have been lax in my duties, and I apologize in that we still have multiple ships that have been made are in my inbox. I've yet to process them and make them available in the library, and I really should have already done that by now. I apologize for that. So the squadron-sized ships are still at 364, and the fleet-sized ships are 265. And a reminder, that is only in the library. There are multiple ships that are not in the library that are part of the client itself. But quick note on the SAB Online client. I did put out a new version of the SAB Online client. But two major things that occurred. Obviously, I had to change it so it connects to the new game server. Hopefully, you can just download it and it will work. I've changed the wallet, what's the default? The default usually was a direct connection to the server. Now it's through a name, so that I'm hoping that will make it easier for me in the long run, for you, and whenever I have to switch servers, I can easily do it without interrupting service too widely. So that's one of the things that occurred. Also, I added support for X-ships in the FedCom client. Now, we don't have the X-ships definitions yet. I have to send the X-ships that I currently have out to people so they can actually do the ship definitions. And thirdly, I added the support for the campaign room so that you can have it so that only the things that are part of the library show up. I.e., there's not part. Normally, they're generated from the master ship table, the internal table, which has all the ships that are currently part of the client, but it's an old copy of that chart. I'm sure you guys remembered from the old module G3, actually G2, and I think G3 has the same chart, and that's what's in there. So some of the ships that I don't have in the library, but I have in that. Those are now gone. You don't see it, but at least by default. If you want to, you can disable that feature in the options for that plugin, and that will enable so you can see all those ships again. Now, when you do that, you have to restart the client because of where everything gets initialized and how everything gets loaded. And with that, that is news for this week. And it's me, so the one and all Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got Gary, we've got Barry, we've got Russ, and we got me, of course, because it's not a podcast without me. Hey, what can I say?
Well, you said too much.
I don't think I said too much.
Not this time.
Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when I'm perfect in every way. If you're old enough to know that song, you are really.
I am.
Oh Lord, I remember my father singing that song. You know that little ditty part of it. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
6 p.m. in the last. Okay, Gary, you want to do a quick update from yourself when it comes to the Carnivons that I know Barry and I discussed a little more last week, and I talked about it myself over a month ago, I think, at this point. But, yes.
I was hoping to talk about the Carnivons again also tonight, so I was like, when Gary brought that up, I was like, yeah.
Okay. Well, go for it. Gary, why don't you start?
Okay. One of the things I noticed is I think when you're talking about the death bolt options, you kind of skipped over the armor option. But it occurs to me that having a death bolt with extra armor is pretty useful if you're facing an ESG and you want to try to lower it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine that there's an Empire beside the Carnivons that uses those.
just the LDR.
Well, the Lyran Empire itself, though.
But I was also thinking about the armor issue today. That's funny that you brought that up. And it's like, you know, that would be really, really useful. Because that makes them very hard to stop. It really does. Now you've got basically a drone-style weapon that is almost impossible to. I mean, it's going to take a lot to kill it. And unless you have drones.
Which they don't.
And even. What's that?
Which the Carnivans don't.
No. But anybody who's facing. Well, the Carnivans have death bolts to go after death bolts. So, what the heck?
But I was actually kind of on a broader scale because, you know, the Lyran Empire is like one of their two primary enemies. But it seems that in the discussions you guys were having, you're mainly focusing on the Kzintis. But I was just kind of wondering, either in a tournament play or historically, are there any particular pluses and minuses that the Lyran, not so much the LDR, but the Empire itself, would that Lyran or Carnivan players would have against each other? Like, it basically is the Lyran player, would the onus be on keep the ESGs at max so you can actually try to do something with the death bolts, or is there more finesse to it than that?
Well, the big thing...
There might be more finesse to it.
Yeah, because the big thing with the ESGs and the death bolts, because here's the issue, which is the death bolts take at least 32 impulses to load, to prepare and ready to launch. Then...
Not necessarily.
Well, what? That's the rule. It says it takes one crew action.
No. But you have two deck crews. You can put them both on the same death bolt.
Right, which means that you can have one death bolt and 16 impulses. And then you're not
right.
The other one's not going to be moved. Because remember, I'm pretty sure about this. It takes a certain amount of time to get deck crews from one side of your ship to the other side of the ship.
Oh, it does take time to move the deck crews?
Yes. When it comes, at least usually when you go from shuttle bay to shuttle bay, and I'm willing to bet, and I have to double check, when it comes to, if you want to move.
I was unaware of that.
If they're in the same shuttle bay, then, you know, then we're fine. Okay, let me look at this for a moment.
Yeah, but this is,
okay, no more than two deck crews may work on preparing a death bolt at any given death bolt rack at any time. Death bolt that works on a death bolt or dedicated crews are not those, but of them, whatever. Death crews can be moved between different death bolt racks on a given ship or between ship shuttle bays and or bays and a death bolt rack in the same manner as deck crews on carriers, which is J4.813.
Mm-hmm.
And let me see if I got that. Okay, got that one. Okay, search for J4. J4.813. Deck crews are assigned to specific shuttles and can work on any shuttle bay within that bay. Each deck crew is assigned to a specific shuttle box at all times, unless you are being transferred. Deck crews transferred between two bays are unavailable for use on that turn that the transfer is made.
Oh.
The deck crews then can be transferred indefinitely, even if they're only one bay, to avoid having them assigned to a shuttle box.
Now, okay. I was unaware of that.
The last sentence is only important when you're talking about normal SFB where a shuttle bay gets hit. That crew that's assigned to that shuttle bay is dead.
That was the other question. Well, that's okay. So you can't, yeah.
Now, we come
to. That does not survive.
Yeah. Now, the one thing I did not read up on is if it's. I don't see anything when it comes to deck crews and the death bolts in. Okay, must be in the. Yep, that actually says in that FD20.202. The deck crew or deck crews must be in the death bolt box to repair a death bolt and are killed if the death bolt box they are in is destroyed. So if you double up.
Oh, that's painful.
Yeah. If you have two death bolt racks and you double up on one of the death bolts and that death bolt rack gets destroyed, which I'm assuming you wouldn't do that, you have no more death crews.
Right. But on the other hand, if you have, you could have them both on the same rack, and then the other rack would be the one you take as
right
as a casualty.
Right, but
which would be the same thing to do.
But as I pointed out, obviously to change from one death bolt rack to another, it takes a whole turn.
If you do a hit and run attack, whatever, then or Liren or whoever it is, they could try to hit both of them just to be sure. And I mean, they've increased their chances that they'll get the one that both of the deck crews are in.
Oh, that's one thing I never thought about, which is hit and run raids to basically Ready Rocks boxes. I have not looked that up.
Well, would you know which boxes are how would you know which boxes deck crews are in?
Well,
is that public information?
No, but if you don't actually double up on one of the two death bolt racks, I'm just talking about the command cruiser. If you double up, then obviously you know which one it is, because if it's the one that's actually launching a death bolt. If you're launching.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, if it launches the death bolt from that rack on that turn, that's where the deck crews are, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm just wondering if, after you've prepared it, can you, after it's prepared, the deck crews don't have to be there? And they can go switch to the other.
That's correct.
So,
because
it's all prepped. It's just,
Yeah.
And of course, that assumes that you're just. Now, remember, each tweak that you make, whether it's armor or Spitfire or whatever, requires another deck crew action. So, if you double up on one.
Yes.
What went from being 16 impulses became 32 impulses. If you have both deck crews working on the same one, which is 32 impulses.
Yes.
So, in theory, you can have it. If you time it right, actually, what you can do in theory is if you can have one specialized death bolt ready in 32 impulses. And then you can load up another death bolt, just for regular death bolt, nothing specialized, by the end of that turn. At the end of the turn, then you can spend one turn switching if you want to try to switch them. In which case, at that point, you've got one death bolt, possibly two if you haven't fired the other one, and switch over.
Yeah.
So it almost becomes, in my mind, it's like what the Andromedans are do with batteries. It's a constant thinking process of what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because now deck crews become your, limitation. Now, obviously, this is one of the things with tournaments, when it comes to tournaments. In theory, that in a tournament, if we, for tweaking purposes, if we needed to, and if we wanted to up the quote unquote up the power, the
you could give it more deck crews.
Exactly. you could tweak it by giving it like two extra deck crews. So then you can have those death bolts available every 16 impulses, or at least 16 impulse after you launch it. It's not as good as a drone where you can have eight.
Right.
It's eight impulses between I'm talking about between turns, obviously. But at the very least,
well, if you have two deck crews you could have one every 16 impulses. Now you can only fire one per turn.
Right. Right. But the consideration I'm talking about is when you're coming in
preparation.
You might want have two death bolts, in the case of Zinni, it's like two drones fired from the same rack within mm-hmm. 8 impulses of one another if you're coming in to load up, to have a kind of swarm. And
yes,
if you're able to double up both, you have 16 impulses to create that quote unquote swarm of maybe four death bolts, which that's pretty mm-hmm. good. That's a pretty big swarm.
That would be devastating.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. And that's one of those times. What Wild Weasel? Wild Weasel.
Oh yeah.
But yeah.
There ain't no other way to stop that.
Right. So
I think it might be a bit longer than that because you can't start working on the next death bolt until the one that's in the tube in the launcher is launched.
Right, exactly.
And isn't there like a minimum 8 impulse delay or something before you get the deck crews on it? So you're talking more like 24 impulses if you have
No.
I don't think there's
there's no delay before you can start on it, but
yeah, I don't see anything in the rules when it comes to the deck crew action. Now, I've not actually looked at shuttles and deck crew actions.
Mm-hmm.
Let me look at that for a moment. Because I know normally it requires like a minimum of like 8 impulses or I'm thinking about the wrong one. Let me look. Yeah, they are killed. Right. Purchase. I can't commit to the impulse after. Okay, yeah, the loading. So a good example right here in J4.8172, loading cannot commence until the impulse after a fighter lands enters the bay. So the fighter cannot launch until the impulse after reloading is complete. Which is the deck crew action
impulse after.
Right, so it can't start until the impulse after. Right. So there's no delay. There's no at all. You launch, and then the next impulse, you can start.
Is when you start.
When you start the next impulse deck reaction.
Yeah.
Because it says here FD 20.22. The deck crew or deck crews of a given death bolt rack may not start work on preparing a death bolt or for launch until 8 or more impulses after that death bolt rack has launched the death bolt.
What's the rule?
If work is interrupted, it must be restarted from zero. It cannot be resumed at the point of interruption.
What's the rule?
Oh, my. So you...
FD 20.22, page 10 of the...
Oh, the sequence. Rule. There it is. Yep, you're right.
So it's basically 40 impulses between launches, between the...
Yep.
On a side note, that is actually the reason why I'm not entirely pleased about how in the Federation Commander Lost Empire preview PDF, the Carnivons are allowed to launch their death bolts every turn. I think it should be every two turns because there's no concept of deck crews in FC. And based on the sequences that are in SFB, the standard, quote-unquote, is like at least 40 impulses and stuff. So that should equate to two turns because I think that I'd be worried that the FC Carnivons might be a little bit too powerful by letting them launch all their death bolts every turn. But I'm sure there's playtesters mm-hmm. out there that might disagree. So.
Right.
Yeah,
every other
which means
turn.
Which obviously makes The FedCom version of the Carnivon is more powerful than the NASA Beep versions, which, as a way of simplifying it, I can understand. Because I've not looked at the playtest rules for the Carnivons for the FedCom. They're in a captain's log, right?
They are, but they also released a playtest PDF pack where they added two additional ships and they consolidated the playtest rules. Well, they call them preview rules now for both the Paravians and the Carnivons. So you've got the rules for the quantum wave torpedo as well as disruptor cannon and so forth. But the only thing that's not quite fully there is that because in SFB, there's options for pirates to be able to use either quantum wave torpedoes or disruptor cannons, but they can't use heel nippers or just death bolts. Okay. But for now, at least in FC, the Orions can't use any of them. So I'm hoping that if/when we see the Lost Empires formally done for FC, that they'll allow the pirates to be able to use those two weapons and see how it goes.
You had to tell me about that, didn't you? Crap. Well, now I have to go buy it. Yes.
So, for tournament purposes, then maybe a third deck crew could be interesting. Mm-hmm. Not an even number, just a third one.
Right. Understood. But, you know, Barry, as we've always stated, though, I first want to make, first try it out, see how it does as it stands. Before we start tweaking, obviously, the normal things apply. Batteries need to be up to standard of 5 if they're a turn mode of 1. The shields need to be 30, 30, 30, 24 around the back, which always is weird. The reason why I say it's weird because of the Archaeothonian, they actually tweaked it so that is the case. While the King Eagle, that's not the case. You still have the 60, the 30 points all around.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, different empires have, some empires have slightly different shielding.
Understood. But it was for the tournament itself explicitly that they modified the rear shields. And I know why they did it, kind of.
The King Eagle was...
King Eagle needs all the help it can get.
Soap thing. It's still the weakest tournament cruiser in the game.
I don't agree with that.
Well, for what it's worth, the command cruiser for the Carnivons in...
Say that again, Gary? You got cut off.
Well, for what it's worth, the command cruiser for the Carnivons in Module C6 already has pretty thick rear shields. So I don't know whether or not it's too powerful, because the other thing as well is, the point value, including the plus refit, is 147. But that's not including
I got to go. My wife is trying to do banking and she needs my help.
Okay. Online banking, always fun. Okay, well, Barry, you have a good night. And he's gone. So, Gary, continue on, McDuff. Gary, you still here? I can't hear you. Did you say something? Because you were kind of, I couldn't hear you.
Hello?
Hello, I can hear you now.
Okay, yeah. No, I was just going to say, because the death bolts, like, they have a certain BPV increase for speed 20 relative to speed 12. So whatever cost you're charging for the command cruiser, you'd add in the cost to increase the speed of the death bolts to medium speed if you wanted to try to find the equivalent of what a tournament cruiser would cost.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that'd be kind of cool. Don't mind me. Oh, there it is. Okay.
Well, actually, one thing I think is interesting is that... sorry.
I was just trying to bring up the SSD. But continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because one of the things is that, like, And when it comes to the Lyrans, because I was just thinking about how the ESG itself works differently in both game systems. Like in SFB, the sphere is like a hollow sphere, and it lasts for a certain length of time, but it doesn't work right away. Whereas in FC, it's literally an expanding sphere. Like, you can either use it defensively against impacted weapons, or you can use it offensively, and it basically expands out of your hex if there's going to be any strength left. But in both cases, it'd be interesting to see, like, how those different takes of the ESG interact with the death bolts in each system. Because, I mean, FC won't give you the option of armoring your death bolt if you're a Carnivon player. But if you've got more death bolts on the table because you're allowed to fly more, then does that still mean that the Carnivon has an advantage over the Lyran in that sense?
Understood. Yeah. Well, as you pointed out, you know, it'd be interesting to see if, when it comes to the X ships, you know, the way the FedCom ESGs work, maybe they'll introduce that into SFB as another kind of mode of operating.
I would actually love that for X2 ESGs.
Mm-hmm.
And what I also like is, you know, the way that the PPD works in FC, where it's basically you can't overload it, but all four waves impact more or less right away. That would be pretty interesting as like a strike mode or something for X2 PPDs, just to kind of like, and also as it would make it easy to borrow it back in because it'd be no different to how it works in FC already.
Understood. And so, yeah, I did not know about that, and I agree that would. That's a nice way of doing it. I agree. It's still the same weapon, but it works just a little differently. I definitely like it. I like the idea. Because you know, when it comes to X2, people are going to look for the same weapons. They're a little more powerful to a certain degree. The question, of course, is always going to be, because ADB has stated this, which is that the General War and the X2 ships need to be able to fly together, you know, have a combat against each other or with each other or whatever. So.
Well, I mean, you think about it, like even in the current game system, you've got situations like the early Tholians when they were fighting the Klingons the first time around. The Klingons had the Y-era ships, like the D4 and so forth.
Right.
And the Tholians, they had more powerful ships. They were the X-ships of their day, but they were tiny ones. Like, they didn't have any cruisers or anything.
Right.
So you had a very, this prominent quantity versus quality issue. And that's actually what made that war so, that made that, you know, so interesting to play out. So it'd be interesting to see, like, if games like A Call to Arms, like, if they ever introduce the early years in that, then people could actually play some of those larger battles in a way that is more difficult to do in SFB or even FedCom.
Right. Oh, agreed. That is always. Actually, I have not looked at Call to Arms for a while. Jeez, it's been a long ass time since I've actually looked at Call to Arms. And I forget how they handle ships. You know, because the way I see it at the moment, at the very least, we have. I know three graduations when it comes to detail for ships, and then you got your SFB, then you have your FedCom, which the detail is pretty much the same, but the rules are simplified. The weapons interactions are simplified. Some of the weapon choices are not available in FedCom, and then you've got Starmada, which are things that are simplified more. You know, you don't have the detail of individual system boxes which get hit. And it sounds like Call to Arms is another level of detail is removed from the individual ships, which allows obviously.
Well, things like power differently, because what they do is. I guess the assumption is that you're flying your ship at speed 16 ordinarily in FC terms. And then you've got various orders that you can give. But some of your orders have a power drain function, which basically impacts other things that your ship can do. So, for example, if you're a Fed player, then the reload photon torpedoes is a power drain action. And but then certain ships have the fast trait, and they basically, I think they give you like a free power drain or something like that. So you kind of, you're able to, but then on the other hand, they don't have as many weapons and stuff. But yeah, like there's all sorts of, I guess, artifacts from a call to arms in other game systems that have been tweaked or whatever to make sure that they fit, you know, the SFE more properly.
Understood.
But yeah, so I was going to say, I do think it'd be interesting to see, because actually, I mean, I guess on a broader topic, maybe this would be an interesting topic for a future call-in. But I'd be curious to see, like, what is the most popular empire that ADB themselves invented, as opposed to inherited from the TV show? Because I'm guessing it's Valyrians, but I'm wondering if that's actually true, though.
Yeah. Actually, that's a question. Because I know the Zinni actually exist in the cartoon version of Star Trek. I don't know if there actually was a Liren version. You know, Liren Empire in the cartoon version of Star Trek.
Well, actually, what was interesting is that the Lyrans and others like the Hydrans and so forth were invented for the SFU, but they did show up later on in the first 2.5 Starfleet Command PC games. So, but then what they had to do is that when the Kzintis, because they didn't introduce the Kzintis into Starfleet Command 1, but in Starfleet Command 2, they did an empire that used the Kzinti ships, but they didn't want to. They didn't basically do a sign, because I think ADB have a separate licensing to be allowed to call them Kzintis.
Right.
But so they created a dog-like species called the Mirak.
Right.
And they basically fly Kzinti ships. Not Carnivon ships, though, but Kzinti ships.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But they were presented as aggressors against the Lyrans and stuff. Because they didn't quite, like, they mixed and matched a bit with the timeline. Like, they introduced the ISC in Starfleet Command 2, and they play up the pacification campaign and stuff. But they actually ended up inventing a new species for the ISC, the frog-like people called the Meskine. And when I first got into the SFU, it was through Starfleet Command, so I actually had to unlearn the fact that the Meskine... I had to basically realize that the Meskine don't exist in, quote-unquote, proper SFU.
Right.
But so it's like all these kind of things and so forth that Paltrin seemed to... you know, because their setting was kind of a hybrid of the TV movie... I guess they had one license from Paramount to use movie-era ships and to get George Takei to narrate it.
Oh, jeez.
And then a license. Yeah, because, he basically, he voiced some of the cutscenes in that game.
Oh, it's not the voiceover. It's when Starfleet Command got involved with Paramount. Ugh. I still remember that version of the game coming out and how awful it was. You know... Well, it was unstable. At least that's the one thing I remember. It was, you couldn't stay running for very long. It always was crashing. And then, of course, then after when they got involved directly with Paramount, you can use Star Trek, you can use a license and all that wonderful stuff. I'm not sure how it was, like a year or so, and they went, you know, we're not really getting our money back from licensing the Star Trek to you. We're pulling it. Boom, and it's dead. You know, so.
I do remember with the third game, they ended up basically jumping ahead to the next-gen plus era. So you had Picard in it instead of Sulu. And I think they even had like ships like the Sovereign and Intrepid class, and there's like a special scenario, the Borg cube, that sort of thing. But at that point, they went further away from the SFBism, so ships had only 4 shields instead of 6, that sort of thing.
Right. Which there's some problems with having 4 shields versus 6. You know, It's like the whole Andromedan thing all over again to a certain degree. In that, you know, with the Andromedans, of course, their biggest issue is that they have you have front half, back half. So, you know, you have more directionality wise, you have to turn your ship a heck of a lot more to get to a different panel to be available. So there's that issue. And obviously, I'm not sure when it comes to Starfleet Command 3, what the if there was any other difference when it comes to the pull away from SFB and how I'm pretty sure, if I recall correctly, the first Starfleet Command was based off of SFB, the rules. When it comes to interactions, the play of how long it took to recharge things, and that those timings were based on SFB timings. I'm not sure if those held true with Starfleet Command 3. You know, if they, you know, with the removal of going from 6 shields to 4 shields, did they also mess with some other of the other timings? You know.
It's probably best to treat 3 as like its own separate thing and just not put it in the same category as the first 2.5 ones.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. So, anyhow.
But I do think now that, because at the time, there wasn't quite the same appreciation or nostalgia for the original series design, so.
True, that's when next generation was really hot, you know.
I wonder, maybe a game that licensed, you know, they could feel free to steal a few F seasons. Like if they want to make ships fly twice to go backwards, that'd be great. But I think that now, I think a game system that basically incorporated the actual look of the Starfleet universe, I think might have more interest. Like even like when it comes to like, I don't know if you watched much of Enterprise, but like, I still remember when they did the Mirror Universe episodes and they showed the OG, like, Constitution class, the Defiant, whatever. And, I mean, it still held up. And but then on the other hand, I mean, there's, you know, so I'd be just to see, like, you know, someone that basically took things like the designs for the, you know, Will McCammon's designs for the Klingon DX and the Vincennes class advanced cruiser. And use those to basically, you know, and even just like the classics designs, but also like, you know, ADB's designs for like the Dominator, that sort of thing, and made it like a, you know, a game universe that basically leaned on that. So mm-hmm. I'd be curious to see, like, would that be a deal breaker for people, or would the fact that it's a different universe in terms of the way that the things work, like ships fight at warp speed and you've got the various, like, SFU-isms rather than franchises and stuff, but would there be enough people that would be willing to get into it?
You mean the same kind of real-time strategy game that, but based on FedCom?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure, like, whether you do it as, like, similar kind of thing as Starfleet Command, where you focus mainly on the tactical side, or if you did, like, a Prime Directive kind of thing, where you were, like, a person. And you could maybe, like, say, for example, like, in Gump's Federation, there's deck plans for the Federation frigate.
Oh, okay.
So imagine, like, if somebody basically created that, and you as a player were in that ship, or in an exit version of it, whatever. But then also it transitioned into the tactical level, where you're basically commanding the ship. And but it's basically working under, you know, the kind of assumptions that exist in the SFU in terms of, like, you know, warp speed combat or cruising or, you know, dash warp and, you know, the kind of things and stuff that, like, you know, the glue that we're used to, everything fitting together.
Right.
I mean, like, would people be willing to take that on?
I think most of them would be willing to take it up. You know, that, you know, it's close enough to Star Trek that they'd be willing to, you know, want to buy it. You know, it's just like Star Armada, you know. Starfleet basically got SB version of, got converted to Starmada, which allowed you a Star Trek type, it's close to it's based off the old generation, the old Star Trek, the original series. And people buy it because, now they have Star Trek on in Starmada, So I think people probably would be willing to buy it. Now, the difficulty, obviously, with that is that's expensive as hell game to create. Because you're talking about ARP. Because what you're sounding like is that a game which is RPG, but then can convert into at the very least, opportunity to do tactical battles as the captain, where you're able to control the ship and fight other ships, but that's only part of the whole game, is fighting in the ship, and then you might go down to the planet to investigate what's going on there, whether it was this, let's say this settlement was destroyed, they got to find out, okay, what happened to that settlement, what find clues when it comes to what happened to the settlement, and then go off to, whatever that clues find, you might have to go to another planet, you might have to go to a star base or something along those lines and make a kind of, that kind of RPG adventure, that's a very expensive game to create. Just because of the 3D interactions. Obviously, you can make it a little cheaper by going 8-bit, going kind of old school. The whole what's a good game that is like that? Oh, jeez. I'm thinking about
the franchise has Star Trek Online, but there's also games like No Man's Sky and Elite Dangerous that have like a galaxy for, although I guess Elite Dangerous would be more like if you were a free trader captain rather than a Starfleet officer. But I'm just even thinking, because like, the franchise themselves, like with the current series, like the new Pike show that's coming up, they're going in a new direction when it comes to reimagining the ship shapes, like the Constitution class, which is fine. It's divisive, but it's fine. But that basically does mean that it's almost like they're almost leaving the door ajar for ADB to be able to license a game that actually leveraged the original series designs as well as ADB's own unique designs, like the Andromeda ships and so on.
Yeah. I'm assuming. The thing is, I don't know enough about any licensing issues that ADB had with Starfleet Command. Meaning, licensing issues with Paramount about Starfleet Command. It was because I know Starfleet Command, the original one, they licensed it from ADB. Now, given that, did Paramount have an issue with that? Because it started becoming popular, and Paramount might have came in and said, well, you've overstepped your bounds. We'll let you live. We don't, sue you out of existence. But we're going to take over, that license. Basically, they're going to have to license it from us. So I'm not exactly sure what happened with Starfleet Command when it comes to licensing and that kind of thing. And the reason why that's relevant is just because of with Paramount insert itself into any game that's created based on the Starfleet universe. Obviously, look and feel, it has to be Star Trek-y without looking like Star Trek, the canon, that comes from Paramount.
Well, all the more reason to do a game based on Omega and let people start off in the Federal Republic. So they're still humans, but they're not flying saucer in the style ships, and they've got a whole bunch of new to them designs for other empires that they can use with. Maybe that might be safely away from the Alpha Octant to not tread on any toes, because none of those empires exist the franchise.
Oh, agreed, agreed. I agree that that would make it quite interesting in that case, because I think that that would be definitely doable. In that case, you would possibly be part of the one of the original settlement. You know, you're stationed there at the planet right before it got moved by interstellar forces beyond your control from the Alpha Octant over to the Omega Octant. You know, and it's like, oh, all of a sudden, those stars don't look quite right anymore. You know, and that kind of thing. That'd be kind of cool. Obviously, as I said, depends upon what kind of quality of a game you're looking into, because of depending upon, you know, if you want like a Call of Duty kind of interactivity. I'm not talking about, you know, the blast them, shoot them up kind of thing. I'm talking about how the characters look, how the real-time rendering and all that kind of thing. That kind of stuff gets really expensive really fast. That's in the millions of dollars to create.
Well, versus, maybe more of a cel-shaded look like in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, but yeah, I agree. You know, you're talking about Zelda, Breath of the Wild?
Yeah, because, I mean, there are other games that have a similar kind of, you know, cel-shaded look, and maybe that would work with the kind of original series inspired uniforms or whatever. Like you're leveraging the fact that, you know, the source materials from a certain era or whatever, so you don't necessarily have to go full Last of Us in terms of the level of detail that the human or Falcon characters or whatever have. So
yeah, but still it's going to be quite costly even for that. You know, 3D renderings are, see, it's not the cost. Okay, you have two possible costs. You can either pay someone to do it, or you can do it yourself, depending upon how much time do you have. You know, it takes to create the interactivity of the characters is not easy. That's a lot of work. That's why I say, you know, things like that are expensive, you know, in millions of dollars. You know, if not tens of millions of dollars. You know.
Well, if you win the lottery,
just ask Blizzard, you know.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's just a case of like, if there's somebody out there that is looking for a science fiction property and stuff, I mean, would they find, you know, be, you know, because anyway, but I mean, this is kind of stuff that's above our paycheck or whatever, above our pay grade, I suppose. But it's interesting to think about nonetheless.
Oh, I totally agree. I think it would be a fascinating game to play. The big issue is getting it done. You know, it's always the dollar bill that is the issue. You know, whether it's the people, you know, because as soon as you make a dime off of any IP, you need to be paying somebody. It no longer is fan material. It's a corporation. You know, it makes money. It's a money making business. In which case, everybody wants to get paid. You know. So, anyhow, we really need to wrap this thing up. It's getting late. I need to get up in like 6 hours, and I still have to put this thing to bed. So, Gary, it's been a pleasure to having you around. Lord knows we got started late.
Yep. Okay. And just a quick note for anyone who hasn't seen it, there's a new batch of Shapeways ships, including the first ship from the M81 Pirates. So if you're interested in the miniature side of the SFU, pop over and have a look. Oh, and before I forget, they've got another batch of 1-7,000 scale tournament cruisers if you'd want to collect those two.
Yep, which I'm right now showing up on the screen for those of you who are actually watching the video. And those who are not, I apologize. Obviously, you can go to Shapeways. Actually, the way I usually find where it is in Shapeways, because I have a hard time finding it in Shapeways, going to Shapeways directly, is going to the SFU discussion board, go to the Shapeways topic, go to Shapeways store, and there's a link right there to get you to the A to B section of the Shapeways store.
Best of all, you can go to the menu to go to latest, and it'll actually show them right there for you. Well, it won't tell you which month they're up there, but it'll group them in order of publication.
Right, right. There's the old Galaxy Pirates people. They look pretty cool. Look pretty cool. You know, oh yeah, those are the ones with the single wing, and that was so they can easily grab freighters and. Oh, Provo Logistics Base looks pretty cool. That's one thing I definitely appreciate with going with Shapeways, you know, from the original die-cast models. And that is that things like you would never, ever see. Things like tweaking the bases so you can have a different base per empire. So you don't have to say, okay, this is the base. This is a generic base. This is the one you use for everybody. Everyone created exactly the same looking base. It's like, if you really think about that, that's truly not the case. They might have the same functionality between every base, and they're relatively the same, but when it comes to the way they look, that's going to be different, you know? So, anyhow, Gary, it's been a pleasure. You have a good night.
I'm sure Barry will, and I'll have a good night as well. Okay.
I did say Gary, didn't I? I might have said Barry, in which case I apologize to Gary, because his name is Gary and not Barry. But, anyhow, had a nice little discussion there about the Carnivons, which is the continuing topic, which I'm hopefully we've killed it at this point. you never know. You know, Barry might have it bouncing around his brain some more. We might come back to it again, and hopefully not next week. I'm hoping, Lord have mercy, hopefully we can get to this, which for those of you who can't read it, and I'm sure even those on the video couldn't read it, basically, it's my notes on different kinds of tournaments, you know, and I'd love to discuss different kinds of tournaments, not just, you know, things like, you know, an EW tournament versus a mega tournament, but other ways of running a tournament, you know, which would be interesting to see, maybe a way of getting people more involved in tournaments. Especially these days with, you know, the increase of people coming back, you know, it seems like with all this stay at home stuff, you know, they're going, you know, what's a game that we enjoyed to play? And some people who have not played Starfleet Battles for years are going, you know, I used to play Starfleet Battles. I used to have lots of fun, plenty of time. And now since they can't go out as nearly as often as they previously could, now they're going, you know, why don't we stay home? And we have to stay home, so let's play something I've enjoyed in the past, you know, which is always good to hear when I see people I haven't played in, you know, in 10 years, you know, and I'd like to get back to it. Sorry. My kitty wants to play with my cord. For those on the video, they're wondering why I got distracted there. But anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.